T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
The McNeil and Parkin Show, afternoons on The Score.
I can't see anything. I couldn't see this coming today. So I'm living this. This is literally a life, just like you guys are asking questions. I got my own questions, and that's kind of what I put on to my teammates tonight. I strongly believe that I couldn't tell them to not go out there and play the game, because I barely know how to handle this. So if they believe that they didn't need to go play, or they didn't want to play, then I told them, encourage them, do that if that's what you feel. But just know, don't not go out there and play because you feel like you're leaving me behind. That's not what this is. We still have a season going on. We're still trying to accomplish something as a family. I feel you guys support. I'm going to support you, and that's that. So I can't tell you what's going to happen next.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
That was Cubs right fielder and team leader Jason Hayward after he elected to sit out last night and join many other black athletes, but also teams across the sports landscape, both in baseball and otherwise, in sitting out in protest over the killing of Jacob Blake in Kenosha. The Cubs continued to play. Jason Hayward sat. They're off tonight. And their general manager, Jed Hoyer, joins us now on The Score on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. Jed, we appreciate the time as always. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I've had better 24-hour periods.
I imagine. What was last night like for you?
Well, it was chaotic in the lead up to the game. Candidly, I think that somewhere around 5:30 or so, we ended up doing a quick FaceTime call with David Ross, and you know, he told us that he sat down with Jason and that Jason wasn't going to play. And obviously we're totally supportive of that decision, and the stuff that was happening in the NBA with the cancellations had been going on for, I guess, an hour or two at that point, and things were moving, you know, incredibly quickly. And so he told us they were going to have a quick team meeting, and he went out there, they had a team meeting, and he called us back and we did another call, and it was very much, I want to say hectic or chaotic, but it certainly felt like we didn't have, the amount of time that you would have wanted to have to process a team-wide decision, to be candid, that, guys were, in game prep activities, getting loose. John Lester was warming up. Our guys were trying to get ready to play a game that they've been preparing for all day. And suddenly we were in a situation where I think people were very torn. I think a lot of players were torn playing yesterday. Obviously, Jason was encouraging us, our players, to go out and play, but I think still some guys felt torn, and it just felt like we were rushed for a decision, frankly. And I think that was unfortunate, but that's the nature of the world we're living in. I think things feel minute to minute and hour to hour, and certainly it was not a amount of time that I think you would have wanted as a team to have a really open discussion about how to move forward as a group.
Is there regret?
That's hard to say. I think that we didn't have, like I said, we didn't have the time to really be able to process the decision. And, I think Jason, certainly felt validated and supported by the organization and by his teammates. And, he was encouraging guys to play. I think any regret is, like I said, regret in not being able to have the time and this calmness to have a discussion that the gravity of the situation warranted. That we were up against the clock to play, and like I said, guys were sort of in their game prep, and it felt it felt rushed, and I think that's the regret. I don't think that there's no point in going back and looking at the decision with regret, because I feel like that was how we had to make it. The West Coast teams had, you know, sometimes 2-3 more hours to make that decision, and they had the time to have the team meetings that I think would have been really warranted. I think that having that kind of team meeting with the ability for everyone to talk and feel like they were able to process things better, that would have been nice. We didn't have that situation, and I don't think you can regret that because that's just simply the nature of what happened yesterday.
Yeah, I just wonder, based on your comments, if you suspect or know that a few guys woke up today wishing they would have stood behind their teammate, Jason Hayward.
Yeah, I haven't talked to anyone that expressed those feelings, and if guys feel that way, you know, then they should express that. And I think that today is a day off, and I think a welcome day off for, you know, guys to clear their head and get their thoughts together. And, you know, I'm sure tomorrow when the team reconvenes, there'll be a lot of discussions around what happened last night and what's happening in the world. And I think that'll happen tomorrow. But, you know, today hopefully is a good day for everyone to, like I said, get away from the ballpark a little bit and get their thoughts collected. And we can, you know, regroup tomorrow as a unit.
How did you, Jed Hoyer, personally feel with Jason Hayward sitting out but everybody else playing, the optics of him doing it alone like that?
It was that's a great question. How did I feel about it? I felt as though I was proud of Jason for taking that stand. It was something that was important to him. He certainly did, you know, felt like that was the right decision, and we couldn't have supported him more. You know, I guess what I honestly felt is I wish we could have had, you know, the time needed to probably have the right discussion. That's kind of how I felt. That I think that if the guys as a group had chosen calmly to play, then I think that would have been great. I think that's probably the regret that I had, or the feeling I had, is I don't think we were given that, and I think that was a shame. And you never like to feel as though the process or the moment isn't we're not able to wasn't reflective of how serious the decision was, and I think that it would have been nice to have more time to make that decision.
You know, what struck me with what Jason said last night, Jed, was, you know, obviously he's so respectful and candid and thoughtful, and he took up for his teammates. But it was like he said, you know, my teammates asked me if I was going to kneel in spring training. And, you know, they were saying that we would support you in this. And that was the only part of it that honestly bothered me, was like the idea that the only person who should really be offended enough to want to sit or maybe to want to kneel was the black guy on the team. And I just wonder, like, about the conversations that you can maybe shed light on. We know baseball clubhouses tend to skew conservative. It's not nearly as black dominant as the sport should be, or the NFL or the NBA. Like, how uncomfortable are those conversations in baseball clubhouses compared to what we're seeing in the sports of football and basketball?
I don't think uncomfortable is the right word, because we've had some really excellent discussions around these topics as a group this year, and I think they were very open with people talking about different perspectives. I don't think they've been uncomfortable, but certainly they are different. I mean, the demographics of our sport are different than the NFL and different than the NBA. And so, but I don't think they're uncomfortable. And in fact, I've been proud of our guys when we've had those discussions, that they have been really open and honest. And I think it's brought our group together.
Are you confident that your team would have the support of ownership if they decided to sit out in protest tomorrow night?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, obviously yesterday we didn't know what direction that was going to go leading up to the game. And certainly, you know, we were, you know, talking to Tom about that situation, and, you know, he was very supportive of Jason's decision. And I think that's the key, you know, for us, is that as a collective, we have to make a decision. And I think, like I said, there'll be discussions tomorrow, and they'll make a decision about how to move forward. But yeah, I have no question that ownership would be on board with whatever the players choose to do.
Jed, how is this for you? How frustrated are you by what we all, I think, to varying degrees, are feeling helplessness right now? helplessness over economics. Economics as a relation to the pandemic. And you guys had to make some very tough, painful decisions this week on your scouting departments. Have you ever, during your baseball life, experienced anything that challenged you as much as these last 5 or 6 months?
No, you know, certainly not. And yesterday you referenced it. I mean, you know, yesterday we spent the great majority of the day, you know, informing a lot of people that have contributed to our success that they're not going to be back with the Cubs after October 31st. And it was incredibly painful. You know, I think we had the smallest headcount in baseball when we got here in 2011. We've built this up with help from ownership. We've built this up to have a great front office and great scouting staff and player development staff. And one that I think is representative of a, you know, crown jewel, you know, big market franchise. And, you know, to have to inform a lot of people, like I said, that contributed to a lot of wins that, you know, we wouldn't be able to bring them back was, I mean, beyond painful. It's just, you know, we built this thing up and it had to trim down as a result of just the fact that the revenues have been so depressed in 2020, and the forecast for 21 obviously is not rosy, you know, from a revenue standpoint. So, you know, impacting people's lives in that way, people that have given so much to the game of baseball and letting them know that we can't bring them back it was incredibly painful. And we've worked all year to try to avoid that. You know, we've had across the board pay cuts to avoid that. We've, you know, done everything we could to, you know, avoid any kind of furlough situation. But ultimately, and we're able to get to the end of the baseball calendar, which is 10/31. But ultimately, going forward into 21, you know, we're going to have to shrink in a number of areas as the revenues are shrinking. So it was, yeah, that was one of the worst days I've ever had at work as a result, because so many good people that have given so much to this organization and want to continue to give so much to the organization aren't going to be able to be back.
So the understanding as of now is that these cuts are permanent?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I certainly hope that this is a blip, that we look at what's happened in 2020 and then what we were expecting in 2021. And hopefully, you know, we look back and this is a short-term, you know, revenue blip where, you know, we can get back in 22 and beyond to, you know, the same revenues we had before, and then we can get back to, you know, hopefully the same size front office and player development staff and scouting staff that we had. But, you know, realistically, you know, in the near term, yes, this is what we had to do because, you know, revenues, this is not a small revenue decrease. This is a massive revenue decrease. And we're just trying to make, you know, trying to make ends meet as an organization. And it's going to take us a little bit of time to get back to where we were. And it's going to have to involve, you know, people being able to mass gather and be able to, you know, come to a ballpark in the same way. And until we have that, it's going to be really difficult from a staffing standpoint.
Jed, I'm curious about you, and you're a thoughtful guy. You're a well-read guy, a lot of experience and a lot of different things. When you're down, when it seems like the sky is falling, and just a reminder, it's not. You're two games up on the Cardinals in the division still, even though you lost the series to the Tigers. What do you do to pick yourself up? What gets you out of the doldrums when you're feeling low?
I mean, I guess I look at it that, you know, I think that this pandemic, I think, has to give you perspective, right? I mean, this thing has ripped families apart. It's cost so many lives and so many jobs, and so many people have been so deeply impacted by what's happened. And, you know, I feel like if you feel down for a second, you just have to think about what, you know, so many people are going through right now to realize how fortunate you are. So I feel like throughout this whole process, this has been, as you said before, like probably the most trying 6 months professionally that I've had. And I'm sure Theo would say the same thing. But ultimately, you know, in a lot of ways, we're incredibly fortunate. And so I don't feel like I can't be down. I don't feel like I'm that's warranted given what other people are going through.
We're talking to Cubs general manager Jed Hoyer on the Score. Just to wrap up the last conversation about the cuts from yesterday, that there seems to be like kind of ambiguous reports out there, Jed, about like how many people, where it was. I read double digit player development, amateur professional scouts. Can you, what specifics can you offer up about what had to happen to the Cubs organization yesterday?
You know, I guess I would call the cuts significant. I wouldn't want to place, you know, a number on it, but you know, we did have to make significant cuts. I think, you know, in player development, obviously, you know, there's going to be structural changes the way minor league baseball is. And we did have to make, you know, cuts in really every area of baseball operations. And so it wasn't sort of in one area or another. It was sort of across the board in having to become a smaller department. So I don't want to put a number on it, but it was a significant cut. And I think, unfortunately, we're going to see that really almost across the board in Major League Baseball, that, you know, that's not going to be unique to the Cubs, unfortunately, that people, you know, a lot of great scouts and a lot of great coaches are going to get, are not going to be retained by organizations simply because of both the structure of minor league baseball going forward and just the revenues of the game. I think that this is going to be a shrinking, so to speak, of the entire industry until revenues and come back. And the only way that comes back, like I said before, is with fans.
And then to the issue in the country that isn't the pandemic, about the racial injustices, and you guys have such a platform and so much influence and resources at your disposal that just the vast majority of places don't have. I'm curious, like a player protesting or boycotting a game is certainly powerful. A team boycotting is more powerful. But I'm curious about like actionable things that are not symbolic, but maybe are actually systemic. What can be done and what are the Cubs doing with their platform to address these social inequities?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think something that, you know, I think it's been a huge topic all day, which is, you know, as teams are sitting out or leagues are sitting out, it's a powerful statement about what's actually important and priorities and making sure that we're talking about and thinking about the right things. And we're not talking about, you know, sports in this moment, but we're talking about, you know, racial injustice. But I do think that that's the discussion that we have to continue to have tomorrow and going forward. This is like, how do you turn that into real action? I think that the statement is wonderful, but ultimately it's going to have to, you know, come with time and resources and action. And I think that that's the second part of that. The statement, which is, like I said, a powerful statement, which is boycotting the games, has to be followed up with real action and real involvement. And I think it will be. I just feel like this is the energy and the focus with which people are talking, I think is real. And I think that they're going to enact real change.
The trade deadline, Jed, is rapidly approaching. Are you expecting it to be relatively quiet given the oddness of this season? And are you working the phones like a maniac?
I don't think it's going to be quiet. I think it's going to be different. I think that, you know, I think that, you know, it's half the time you usually have a player. So I think that, you know, we've only played for a month now, or maybe 5 weeks, I guess, as of the deadline. And there's about 4 weeks after plus a playoff. So, you know, it's half the amount of, it's a lot less data that we normally have about how a player is playing. And then you're only acquiring a player for half the time you usually would be. So, I think there'll be action. I don't expect it to be quite as big as some years. That'd be my read on it. I think that big, bold moves probably don't feel like they're going to happen as much in a year where, you know, we're playing for only 60 games and there's only, you know, 27 days or so after the deadline. So I think there's going to be a lot of moves of teams that are looking to shore up their bench, their bullpen, things like that, but I don't think it's going to be quite as bold as some years.
Of all of the changes and the weirdness that we're seeing in 2020 baseball, which of them, if any, are you hoping are going to be permanent going forward?
That's a good question. You know, I will say, and I know I'll probably there's probably a lot of purists out there that won't like this, but I like the extra inning rule. I would move it back an inning. I'd like to play the 10th inning straight up, but I think that after the 10th inning, I like this rule. Long games and rain delays are the bane of my existence, and I just think that there's no one in baseball that likes a long game. It makes you put players in uncomfortable positions, and oftentimes leads to injuries. It can lead to a team having a slump for a week after a game like that because your roster gets screwed up. And so to me, having a situation where you get rid of the 17, 18 inning game, I love it. And I think it creates real action. So I would move it back one inning, but I would start the 11th with a man at second base. And I think that's been a pretty exciting development.
Yeah, I think most fans we've talked to seem to agree. It's like, don't go anywhere. It's closer to sudden death. It feels more imminent that you're going to get your conclusion. So are you optimistic that is going to be a part of baseball going forward?
I think the reaction has been pretty positive. And a lot of people like me that were skeptical, I think they feel like, like you said, I think if something's going to happen right away. Extra inning starts and it's, right away, you're in the thick of the action. And I do think, one thing in baseball that's sort of human nature is a lot of extra inning games turn really ugly. A lot of times there's substitutions that take out a team's best players. And then it's sort of human nature that players start swinging for the fences in extra innings. Everyone's trying to end the game. So you get a lot of empty swings in extra innings and a lot of bad at-bats because that human nature is to try to end the game right away. And so I think by having a runner at second base right away, it also increases the quality of that bat in extra innings. So I think there's so many parts of it that are good in that regard that watching the 14th and 15th inning of an extra inning game, I think I don't think anyone enjoys that. And hopefully we've gotten rid of it.
Jed, last baseball question from me, and we always appreciate your time. To circle back around to where we started the conversation with last night, there's just a little bit of confusion coming in on social media and the text line. If you guys had more time last night, do you think the team would have reached a different decision to play that game?
I don't know. I truly don't know. But I think that the discussion that the team would have been able to have, I think, would have been incredibly valuable for that group. I think that's the most important thing is I think that I know there were players that felt rushed. They felt uncomfortable. And I think that having had time to really go through their emotions and talk about them the way the Giants and Dodgers were able to, right? For example, I think that would have been helpful. So I don't know what the conclusion would have been, but I know that everyone would have felt like they were heard or wouldn't have felt rushed, and so I think that would have been different. I wasn't in the clubhouse last night, and so it's really unfair for me to say what the reaction would have been because I'm not on the team and I'm not one of those 28 players. I'm not one of the coaches. So I can't say, and it'd be inappropriate for me to say, but I know that I think people would have felt better about the process had they had that discussion that I think was really needed, but wasn't granted given the time.
Jed, thank you so much for the time today. Always, always appreciate it. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
That's Cubs General Manager Jed Hoyer. And I should mention also, Jed does incredible work with Lurie's Children's Hospital, and they need your support during the COVID-19 pandemic. LurieChildrens.org/COVID-19 support. You can make gifts and donations to the Children's Hospital right here in Chicago. LurieChildrens.org/COVID-19 support is where you can find all of that very worthwhile information. He does great work and is on the board with Lurie's, and we appreciate Jed Hoyer's time. So, yeah, he won't say it, Mac. It certainly feels like he feels different. And, I think it's hard to reconcile the Jason Heyward being the lone person to sit out and not having – the team had his back in words, but in terms of actions, they played that game. And then when you see how the other teams – handled it, or at least many of the other teams, right? Some it happened with the Cardinals, a couple of others where black players were the only ones who sat out.
Right.
I'll just say, speak for myself. It would have felt better to see the Cubs stand behind Jason Heyward. and not play that game last night.
Yeah, I totally agree. And he's not the only black player on the team. He it would be very easy for him to feel almost betrayed that nobody decided to take part in a work stoppage with him. That would be a tough one for me to swallow if no one is with me on the issue. That'd be tough.
Yeah, and I know this word gets overused, but the optics of it, they're just not good.
No.
Right? They're just not good. You don't want your black team leader to be the guy sitting out and the rest of the guys playing when other teams stand behind their black stars. And again, what I said to Jed, I just kind of reject the idea that the only person who could be as offended by this to sit out would be the black guy. Like it doesn't have to be that way. And I feel like in baseball, it's put through that prism, whereas in the other sports, we know it's not. Because of the demographic differences. And, I mean, tonight, hockey isn't playing. across the board, hockey isn't playing.
Mm-hmm.
But baseball will be the only sport that plays. So it's just the visual of it was not something that I loved last night as a Cubs fan. We have a statement from the Bears, and I want to get a little bit more in-depth in the conversation I wish we were ready to have as a country, as people say to these athletes, hey, what are you actually trying to do? What are you actually trying to accomplish? I got a suggestion. I just don't think we're ready yet. It's Mack and Parkins on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The beautiful thing about our social justice committee was that it was built, right, by the players. I feel that we've already been hands-on. Raised close to $1 million in one season and donated to charities, right, across Chicago. Hands of Hope, Kicks for the City. We do things. Boys and Girls Club, we work with the city already. And I think that our personnel does a really good job.
That was Akeem Hicks from back in June, but because this is America, if I would have told you it was from this morning, I'd be like, oh yeah, of course, that's relevant, some might say, for our times. Here's the most recent statement from the Bears, Mac. In the wake of what has taken place in our backyard of Kenosha over the last couple of days, we as a team have a lot on our mind today. We decided to pause our football activities to voice to each other, our coaches, and our staff where we stand on the real issues around race and police brutality in our country. We had a productive discussion, but we all agreed that talks and discussions are simply not enough anymore, and we need action. We are putting in plans to take action in our communities, and together we believe we can make a real difference. We need action not only today, but in the days to come. I applaud him for it. I am interested in what the action step will take. I think it's kind of crazy that there's an expectation, like the critics of the athletes who are boycotting and sitting out, like, well, what's it going to accomplish? Man, they're not elected to office. They have to have the solutions too. They can't just be the ones who shine the light on, hey, there's a huge problem here. It's a really unfair burden when you feel like there's more leadership coming from the NBA than the federal or local government. But I am interested to see, because the Bears have done some really good things around the city of Chicago in the last few years. I am really interested to see what specific action causes the Bears come up with.
Don't tell us that you have to have more than words and you have to have actions, and then forbid your players to stage a peaceful protest if they choose to kneel for the national anthem because you believe it's anti-American. That's one thing. When the Bears green light that, I'll believe that they are sincere about what they said in that statement they tweeted today. I'm eager to see that unfold as well. And the more I think about last night's Cubs team meeting / decision in Detroit, the more angry I get, Danny. Where was the leadership from fellow veterans with Jason Hayward? Where were other voices in that room? Why did they let him be alone in the choice to work stoppage? I don't understand how they can do that. That's not acceptable.
Shep, I know you wanted to weigh in on that conversation. I was shocked by it, Mac, just because the Cubs have done a lot in unison on these issues by displaying unity. So I was very surprised and disappointed by it, like I said to Jed. But Shep, what did you think?
Well, I just thought a question I just have to ask then in response to that, and I'm curious to know more. I'm curious to be more informed on this, and I've kind of still waiting for, I don't know, and not to say anybody's responses have been incorrect because it's all what people view and what they believe, but why do, if Jason Hayward, if we're really to believe his word, and there's no reason not to, if he says, all right, I don't want you guys to sit out, I don't want you guys to boycott a game or strike for a game, I don't want you to do that, this is my thing, I want to go do this, then why should we just expect everyone else to, I guess, is the question, and why so much disappointment that others looked at it and said, all right, well, I feel for Jason, but we got a game to play. I'm having trouble having the same amount of frustration or disappointment over that, and I'm kind of curious as to a why, I guess.
It's the right thing to do. For me, it's the right thing to do, and it's a matter of personal choice, I suppose, and I guess I'm not saying what 25 other guys did was wrong, but it would have been wrong for me personally in their position to put the uniform on and play. I would have been compelled to join my teammate and join in his cause. I think putting him on the island like that is just it's low rent, man. It's just,
well, it goes against a lot of the credos of sports, right?
We
win together, we lose together. It's like the guy who makes the error at the end of the game, the game's not on him, it's on all of us. We're a team, and so we're going to do these things together as a team, and if you're hurting, we're all hurting, and if you're succeeding, we're all succeeding. Maybe that's not realistic with where America is in 2020 in that sport. I mean, let's just be honest.
I think you could take sport out of it, probably, right? Like, I think that's safe to say.
Yes, of course. I mean demographically. Like, it's sure. Right. It's a diverse sport, but not in the same way that the NBA or the NFL is a diverse sport. And so it's very black minority, right? There's double digit African American players in the sport of baseball right now. It's not over 100. It's a very small number. And so
right.
I think that makes it uglier in baseball. It makes the conversations harder. And I'm sure Jason Hayward is telling I agree with you in that he is saying something, we should believe him, right? You should take it at his word. But I would have liked to think that, hey, if one of us is hurting, we're all hurting. And I would also like to think that you don't have to be the black guy on the team. And I understand Jeremy Jeffers on the team. I understand that. But, like, you don't have to be black to be feeling that pain.
Right.
So.
Absolutely.
So that's the thing to me. And someone says, you know, how many people kneeled with Kaepernick? That was the problem. That was the problem. So, and by the way, yesterday, 4 years to the day.
Oh, is that right?
From Kaepernick. Yeah, crazy. Crazy. The symmetry of it all. But I hear what you're saying, Shep, in terms of taking them at their word, but I think that the team aspect of sports where you want to, like, you know, ride or die together kind of invalidates that a little bit.
I'm not going to lie. It occurs to me that maybe they're thinking, hey, we're playing Detroit. We need to get one in the win column.
Ugh.
Well, I don't dismiss the prospect of that.
Yeah, well, they lost.
They're 1-1. I know, but before the game, they're 1-1 in a series against a team that's been doing very poorly for several weeks consecutively. Does that enter into a, you know, we're human. It might.
First time since May of last year, the Tigers won a home series.
Wow.
Oh, that's good. It's, you know, it was just, I don't know. You see some organizations handle it how the Cubs did, and you see some organizations handle it how the Dodgers did, right? Like Dexter Fowler sat, right, and the Cardinals played. Jason Hayward sat, and the Cubs played. But Mookie Betts sat, and the Dodgers sat. The Mariners have the most black players of any team in the sport. They sat. Their team sat. If you're just asking me, which do I feel better about? I feel better about the guys who backed their teammate than the ones who didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I got to be honest. That's just how I feel. I don't know if I'll be able to do this in the short segment we have coming up, but I'm going to give it my shot in terms of what I would love us to be able to get to in terms of action in this country coming up on the Score. The
past 4 months have shed a light on the ongoing racial injustices facing our African-American community. Citizens around the country have used their voices and platforms to speak out against these wrongdoings. Over the last few days in our home state of Wisconsin, we've seen the horrendous video of Jacob Blake being shot in the back 7 times by a police officer in Kenosha, and the additional shooting of protesters. Despite the overwhelming plea for change, there has been no action. So our focus today cannot be on basketball.
Sterling Brown from the Milwaukee Bucks. It's Mack and Parkins on the Score. We will celebrate Mack's birthday coming up at 4:00. Jason Goff has requested a presence on the show. Of course, we will grant him that at 4:30. Vinny Goodwill will join us at 5:00. Many athletes in sports are talking about action instead of words, Mack. And I've said it's dispiriting, and I apologize here. I'm going to ask for a little bit of leeway to lay this out. But I don't think that we're having the right conversation right now. And I think the conversations are great about police brutality and voting initiatives and things like that. It's just very unfortunate that we're not further along, because to me it should be obvious on some of those things. Like, what happened with George Floyd is terrible. What happened with Laquan McDonald is terrible. What happened with Jacob Blake is terrible. We should be able to get to a point of and work beyond it, frankly, in 2020. And I hope to live long enough to see America have a real reconciliation with its original sin, which is slavery. And I reread this piece last night. It's the single most impressive thing on race that I've ever read. It was in the June 2014 issue of The Atlantic. Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote it. It was called The Case for Reparations. And I knew what reparations were because as a Jewish person, I have studied the Holocaust. Both when I went to Israel on birthright and when I was a kid going to Anchi Em at a Jewish school, you know, kindergarten, first, second grade. Like, you hear about the Holocaust in first grade. I don't know how much any of you know about reparations. It's a very complicated thing. But basically it's, oh, man, we messed up. We want to make it good. Think of a fancier word for restitution, basically. And Germany agreed to reparations for the horrors of the Holocaust in 1952. They talked about it immediately after World War II, but there was opposition and it took a while, but not that long compared to, you know, slavery. But whenever we have that conversation in this country, because we actually do have it, there was a congressman from Detroit who would introduce this piece of legislation every single year for a new session to try to study the issue of reparations. Not with, like, a finished product, not about, like, this much money to these people, but, like, hey, we study pandemics. We study this. We study that. We study viruses. Can we study the impact of slavery and what that might look like in the form of reparations? And it never goes anywhere. 30 years, he introduces this type of legislation. And people always say, ah, logistically, it's tough, and who would find it, and nobody alive now owns slaves, and so who would get the money and the whole thing? But if you actually study what Germany did for Jewish people, yes, Holocaust survivors get checks. Still to this day, you can read these obituaries of Holocaust survivors who live into their hundreds, who are like, I wanted to live as long as I could to get as much money from those Germans as possible, like super defiant Jews until the end. But they also, I mean, it was over $7 billion in the 1950s. So think about how much money that was. It largely funded Israel's navy and its railway system. So it basically gave Jewish people a home, mm-hmm. right? And people talk about, like, oh, slavery, it was so long ago. Yeah, but there's slavery, and there's Reconstruction, and there's Jim Crow, and the Civil Rights Movement, and then obviously there's still racism today. But like, if you go to Germany, part of the reparations were never again, right? That's part of the theme of the Holocaust. Anyone who's anything about the Holocaust, it's never again. They have huge Holocaust memorials in the center of Berlin. They made it illegal. They banned racist imagery. They made it illegal for Nazi symbolism to be displayed. And in this country, we still fly the Confederate flag, and, you know, we have the Lincoln Memorial because it makes it like, oh, we like that story of an American heroic president who freed the slaves. We still don't have an anti-lynching law. We gutted the Voting Rights Act. The New Deal left out black people. Like, it's, we still have it today. And just the conversation would matter so much. Maybe you can't figure out every logistical thing. How much money? Who gets it? Mm-hmm. What cities do you invest in? I'm not even pretending like I have 1/100th of the answers of something so complicated. But like, the movement today is about police brutality disproportionately affecting black men. And we talk about voting. And what Sam Acho did was great, like trying to solve a food desert problem in an area of Chicago. But imagine if America could get to the point where it discussed reparations, because, again, the first step to solving a problem is admitting that there is one in the first place. And that conversation happening, that effort, that recognition, that would truly show from those in power that they get that black lives matter. I just think it would be so incredibly powerful, but I feel like we're so far away from the country being able to say, you know what, we've got to make good on our original sin from 400 years ago.
Well said, Danny. Well, who's the writer again from The Atlantic 6 years ago?
Ta-Nehisi Coates.
I will look that up. Yeah, well, we are a ways from that, at least 4.5 years, I fear. But
Yeah.
Probably it's a lot longer after that, but at least 4.5.
I tweeted the link to it. It's long, okay, cool. It's dense, it's complicated.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
But, I mean, there was reparations in South Africa around apartheid. Reparations. I mean, the fourth largest percentage of the Jewish population in Europe is in Germany. Like, it works. It's worked, but we've just never been interested in that conversation in this country because we'd rather whitewash it and be like, it was a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Well before me. Why should I didn't do it? Why should I do it?
Exactly. And so when people say, oh, we're making progress, we are. But trust me, we have a long, long, long way to go. And I know I'm going to get killed for that on the text line. So be it. We will lighten the mood significantly. It is a day to celebrate around here for our guy, Dan McNeil. He's one more trip around the sun from 60. My God, we celebrate our leader next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.